Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
KER Politics. I have a very interesting woman on the line right now, Bridget Gabriel. Let me tell you a little bit about Bridget. Bridget is a leading commentator on politics, cultural, and national security. She's a legal immigrant to America. She was born in Lebanon, as a lot of my very close friends were. She survived the war in the Middle East by living in an 8x10 underground bomb shelter from the age of 10 until she was 17. Well, your parents were probably happy about that, Bridget. And the only reason I would say that is I'm looking at a picture of you. You could be Mrs. Universe. There's no question about that. Having said that, Bridget is also a regular guest analyst on Fox News Channel and also CNN and many American international media outlets worldwide. She now, in 2016, was knighted in the UK and Europe, and she is now officially known as Dame Bridget Gabriel. She's one of the top 50 most prominent speakers in America. She can speak to everybody because she speaks Arabic, French, English, and, of course, Hebrew. We're going to record this in two segments. The second segment is going to air as a weekend special, but the first 9 minutes and 25 seconds, you're all going to be with us. Having said that, Bridget, I'd like to get your opening comments. You are from a very volatile part of the world. You are used to violence, Lord knows, and I'd like to get your views on what's going on in America. We have some unbelievable violence going on right now.
Exactly, Alan. Thanks for the kind introduction. Nice introduction, by the way. I'm delighted to be back with you. Look, what is happening in America today is horrifying to someone like me, because I was born and raised in Lebanon, which used to be Paris of the Middle East. We were open-minded, we were fair, we were tolerant, we were multicultural, we had open border policy. We wanted to get along with everybody. But unfortunately, when we started seeing the warning signs on the wall, when the thugs and the terrorists, and my situation, the terrorists which ruined Lebanon, now basically the thugs run the country.
Yeah.
Hezbollah, the terrorist organization right now, one of the largest and most structured terrorist organization in the world, runs Lebanon, controls the government, and they have elected themselves into government. And here we are in the diaspora, the Lebanese Christians, and many Muslims who left, because we escaped terrorism, we escaped corruption, because when law and order falls apart and the thugs take to the street fighting for their cause, whatever their cause happens to be, whether it's socialism, whether it's Islamofascism, whether it's communism, Marxism, whatever the ism cause is, the end result is chaos, destruction, and lawlessness. And that's exactly why immigrants like me, who flock to America from all over the world, when you look at Florida and you see all the Cubans in Florida, when you see what's happening in Venezuela right now, people are trying to get over here from anywhere in the world. I speak with such passion about preserving national security and protecting and standing up for law and order in a society is because I lost my country of birth. I do not want to lose my adopted country, America. And my past will be America's future unless Americans right now, while we still have the chance, will stand up and speak up in defense of law and order. And I urge people to go to our website, actforamerica.org, actforamerica.org, and sign our petition to defend and not defund the police, because we need law and order in our communities.
You know, we have a very interesting situation right now, Bridget. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and I live in a very isolated community. I'm about 2 hours north of Seattle, Washington, which is absolutely an amazing city right now, in a negative sense, in my opinion. The mayor and the governor of the state of Washington have pretty much given in to the anarchists. And many of my liberal friends are saying right now, well, that's a good thing. Well, fortunately, nobody has recently gotten killed in the Seattle area as a result of the takeover of the originally 7 square blocks. And now I believe it's down to 3 square blocks. But, you know, law and order to me is something that is absolutely paramount in our society. That's not to say there are not some bad apples in the police force. The police force is a society. All society has bad apples. The bad apples in the police force have to be punished. There is no question about that. But to eliminate the police departments in the various cities and to totally defund them does not make a lot of sense to me. How about to you, Bridget?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, and I completely agree with you. Look, everybody, after the death of George Floyd, the country was united. We all agreed, whether you were white, black, Hispanic, left, right, center, libertarian, everybody agreed that the way George Floyd died was horrific, and that police officer and the police officers who were complicit, who literally sat there and watched him die and did nothing about it, not to mention the man that actually killed him, should absolutely be punished to the fullest extent of the law. Having said that, it does not mean that all cops nationwide are bad. It doesn't mean that they are all rotten. It doesn't mean that they are all racist. We need to recognize that while we need to make sure that the law is enforced and those who commit crime, whether they are in uniform or civilians, are punished to the fullest extent of the law, we do need to recognize that we do need to support and stand with law enforcement in general to maintain law and order in our society. Because when you are in your home and, God forbid, someone breaks into your home at 2:00 in the morning and you hear a noise, somebody walking to your bedroom and you're frantically calling 911, you better hope and pray that on the other line they're going to say to you, the police are on their way. You do not want to be talking to a therapist who's going to analyze your emotional state while the burglar walks into your bedroom. You want to be talking to a police officer. And so this is why we are urging people to go to our website, actforamerica.org, and sign the petition. And we stated very clearly on our petition that while we know that those who commit crime, whether they are in uniform or not, should be punished, but we do need to stand and not defund our police, but actually defend them. And you enter your zip code, we give you the names of your elected city council, every single member, your mayor, and with the click of a button, you can send an email to them. We already have a pre-written letter to them to make sure that we maintain order in society. Because look what's happening in Seattle right now. You know, rape is up, crime is up, the police cannot enter the zone. It's total lawlessness, and even the lefties who were against, who do not agree with what you and I think about and I agree with, even they want the police, they want law and order, or some form of law and order back.
Well, Dame Gabriel, I just want to say one thing. We are definitely, I mean, you're preaching to the choir when it comes to me. You're preaching to the choir, I believe, when it comes to the audience. I admire you for what you are doing. And the reason I say that, aside from the fact that you are a published author, published best-selling author, you have addressed, among other organizations, the United Nations, the Australian Prime Minister, members of the British Parliament, House of Commons, members of the U.S. Congress, the Pentagon, the Joint Forces Chiefs of Staff, etc., etc. So you truly, truly, Dame Gabriel, know what you're talking about. By the way, you continue to stress your website. I guarantee you, your website will be prominently displayed on our website, ad infinitum. And the reason I say that is because we definitely need common sense on this site. There's no question about that. The upheaval that's going on in the United States right now, which I'd like to discuss with you as soon as we take a brief commercial break here. The upheaval is terrifying to me. You have lived through it in your country of birth, and I am so sorry, not only for the Americans, but also for yourself, who is an American, might want to stress, I'm so sorry that we all have to go through this. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be right back.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Continuing on with KER Politics, we are in segment number 6 right now. I have Gordon Klinkenschmidt, Dr. Gordon Klinkenschmidt, more importantly, Chaplain Gordon, on the line right now. He's going to comment on the recent Supreme Court decision, which really impacts religious freedom and the gay community. Your thoughts, Chaplain?
Well, thank you, Al. God bless you and God bless your listeners today in Jesus' name.
Thank you.
As a defender of religious liberty, as a former Navy chaplain, I have sent 5 million petitions to Congress over the years defending religious freedom, especially for our troops, but then for friends of mine like Jack Phillips, the baker in Denver,
yes, sir,
who was under fire for refusing to make a gay wedding cake. Unfortunately, this new Supreme Court decision this week, and I think the case is called Bostock versus Clayton County, where a 63 ruling ruled that employers must hire and cannot fire homosexual or LGBT or transgender people based on their conduct. The court ruled that, you know, basically the sin of homosexuality, what the Bible calls a sin,
yes, sir,
is actually inherent in their identity, and therefore it would be discrimination under Title VII.
Chaps, can I interrupt you just for 1 second? But one very important fact, the Bible stance, God's stance on homosexuality is not brought up only in the Old Testament. It's also brought up again in the New Testament. So both Testaments are in agreement on that.
Yes. And for secular employers, that is not a factor in their decision-making on hiring and firing. And so I don't think secular employers were really firing gay people for being gay in the first place. But for religious employers, this can be an issue. Of course, the Supreme Court did rule in favor of freedom of religion in Jack Phillips' case. Christian bakers do not have to make or participate in gay weddings with their products and services. That was 7-2 decision in 2018. That was a couple of years ago. But now, in 2020, there is a conflicting decision where two Supreme Court justices who were appointed by Republican presidents betrayed the conservative movement. Chief Justice Roberts and the new justice, Neil Gorsuch, who happens to be from Colorado, where I was a state representative, they betrayed conservatives and they sided with the four liberal justices, and they ruled that homosexuality is inherent and not behavioral, essentially. That's my reading of it. And therefore, they have reinterpreted Title VII of existing discrimination law to say that if you discriminate on the basis of sex, then you are also in trouble if you discriminate on the basis of LGBT behavior. Now, I think the Congress who wrote the laws back in the 1960s would, you know, roll over in their graves if they realized that what they were writing at the time would somehow be reapplied by the Supreme Court as promoting homosexuality. It clearly does not do that, and the dissenting opinion by Justice Kavanaugh said that the majority is legislating from the bench. They are writing laws rather than interpreting the laws. By reinterpreting the word sex, you know, you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, to now apply to homosexual behavior, this is a travesty, and it's going to cost religious freedom for Christian employers.
You know, I find that to be a little bit hypocritical. The gay community really wants us to accept it, but yet they're not willing to accept those of us who are, I would have to say, pretty much non-secular in our lifestyles. It's a very hypocritical statement on their part, in my opinion, chaps.
Well, they're trying to split the baby, and thankfully the decision, although it's a wrong decision, the opinion was authored by Neil Gorsuch, who is trying to split the baby and still wants to defend religious freedom. For example, in the dicta of this new decision, he says that churches and schools still have religious freedom if they are religious.
Yes.
And he cites the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, which was signed into law by then President Bill Clinton, And it was that law enacted a previous Supreme Court decision in Hosanna Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church versus school versus EOC, and which ruled that if you're going to violate someone's religious freedom, the government must have a compelling governmental interest and use the least restrictive means possible of furthering that interest. And so that became federal law, which Neil Gorsuch still defends today. He wrote in his opinion that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act operates, I'm quoting from the decision, as a kind of super statute replacing the normal operation of other federal laws, and it might even supersede Title VII in appropriate cases. So religious freedom for religious employers is an exception to this week's decision, Gorsuch claims. Therefore, I conclude that churches do not need to hire homosexuals, that Christian schools or Catholic parochial schools do not need to hire homosexuals because they have a religious freedom loophole, even though Title VII would otherwise require they provide employment preference for gays. So churches are still free, but the question is about business owners. If you are a Christian business owner, let's say you own a bookstore and you sell books, well, that has a secular purpose. You might be forced to hire homosexual employees who disagree with your mission if they don't recommend Christian books. So could a Christian bookstore owner, maybe Zondervan or Hobby Lobby as a Christian employer, if they have a religious mission to their sales pitch, will they still be forced to hire and fire people who sabotage their mission? Or will they also have a loophole the way that churches do? I don't know. That's going to be tested in the courts in the years to come.
You know, right is right and wrong is wrong in our country. And I have another topic I'd like to discuss with you, but we don't have time in this segment to do it. Perhaps off mic we can discuss it and we could air it as a weekend special. But I want to say I agree with you. I find myself as a Christian being very, very, discriminated against in many, many cases. It's kind of interesting because one of the Bible studies that I attend has a member who is a retired Navy SEAL instructor, decorated by the President of the United States. You don't find a better human being when you're looking for somebody to uphold society than Mike Bailey. I'm telling you, the guy is not only a decorated veteran, he's also, in my opinion, really close to being a saint. People have to be more open-minded, in my opinion. And what I mean by that is folks like you and I, chaps, I think have to be given our rights. And folk on the other side of the fence, they have to be given free rein with whatever they want to do. But I have to say, in my opinion, you got to let the Constitution decide. Chaps, thank you so much, sir.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
In the second half of KER Politics, got a really interesting guest on the line right now. His name is Bill Reed. Bill is an author, a best-selling author. Actually, Bill's official name is W. Craig Reed. Very interesting man. He has written a best-selling book entitled Spies of the Deep. Very definitely nonfiction. It talks about his theory that Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran are basically plotting against the United States. Jimmy is on the line with me right now. Jim and I spent a fair amount of time yesterday off mic talking to Bill, and I have to say that Bill's philosophy with all of the investigative reporting that he's done makes an awful lot of sense to us. Bill, rather than me introduce you or Jimmy introduce you, please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, would you?
certainly. I served as a submariner and a Navy diver back during the Cold War and kept in contact with a number of my fellow shipmates, but also those within the community. One of the officers I served aboard later became the NATO commander, the admiral in charge of all NATO submarine operations, and a number of others that I kept in contact with through the community and then through a technology marketing career, and then writing a number of different books. Red November was one of those, hit the New York Times bestselling list, got lucky. And Spies of the Deep is the latest one that I believe tells the truth about what really happened to the cursed submarine and how that set us up for where we are today.
So, Bill, tell us a little bit of the detail on what happened with the Kursk. I mean, you know, briefly, and kind of what the point, what you're trying to express with the book, Spies of the Deep.
Certainly. Well, I mentioned that I was a submariner, and on one of the missions I was on back during the Cold War, we snuck into a Russian harbor. I couldn't talk about it for decades. And we accidentally ran into a Russian submarine, crushed our sail. They depth charged and torpedoed us. So very familiar with almost not making it back. And when I heard about the Kursk going down in August 2000, it hit all of us in the submarine Navy pretty hard, even though we'd once been enemies. But during that time frame, the details we were given by the Russians and the U.S., I knew were not correct. I knew they were covering something up. Just no question about it. I knew the U.S., Memphis and Toledo submarines had been very nearby during this accident, and they weren't talking about this. It took me 20 years to uncover the truth, but I finally did get people to come forward and talk, and that's what's in the book.
Bill, let's talk a little bit about the truth. If your theory is correct, and I'm not saying it is or it isn't, it sounds very plausible to me, I would have to say that, but let's talk about why of Vladimir Putin and Russia is so dangerous in your mind to the United States right now?
Well, we have to go back to August of 99. Putin only had 2% of the vote to be president, and the Kursk submarine went on a top secret mission and got very close to an aircraft carrier we've heard about in the news recently, the Theodore Roosevelt. We've heard about it about COVID. And because of that mission success, Putin congratulated the captain in person, went down to the pier, became an honorary submariner. Putin's father was a submariner. He used that platform to propel himself to 53% of the vote in March. And 6 months later, the Kursk went down. That almost destroyed his career before it got started, but he cleverly found a way to use that to wrest control from oligarchs, gain control of energy organizations, and then fuel a much needed economic recovery in Russia, and then propelled them toward a new Cold War that we're in today with them. It's looking like it's going to be a lot hotter than the last one.
You know, Bill, as I mentioned off mic, and what some of the listeners know, I'm a Russian foreign area officer, Eastern European, Central Asian Russian foreign area officer. And I, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, I was throughout Moscow, St. Petersburg. And of course, prior to that, I'd been in Berlin at the end of the Cold War, right when the Soviet Union collapsed. There was a series of events that happened in that 99 until, you know, 2000 timeframe, over about a year and a half, as Putin was coming to power. The Kursk was a major strategy. There was a fire in the Moscow telecom tower. You had multiple attacks on apartment buildings that it's blamed on Chechen rebels, but some unclear and very nefarious issues. And you had the second Chechen war going on. How, in your mind, did those help Putin achieve more consolidated power? And what did he do in order to, like, actually clamp down in those periods of time to actually gain power?
I do talk about that in the book, that these were things that he was leveraging, of course, to gain power while storming on that platform, if you will, to rebuild Russia, but looking to blame others. And part of that was creating fear. so that his approach could work. Fear that we had enemies that were going to attack us, as he would say, and that allowed him to say, I'm going to rebuild. And I was a KGB colonel, and my father was a submariner. I understand what we need to do. Look at what the Kursk did. I'm going to rebuild Russia, that greatness, so we don't get attacked and have these terrorist attacks and so on. And that's what really propelled him to power. But also what happened was we sent a spy, Edmund Pope, to gain new information on this new rocket torpedo they had developed, the Shval. And we were close to getting that information and actually buying some of these. 8 days after Putin came to power, he threw Pope into prison. It hadn't been done since the 50s. And that put an end to it. And so we were forced to send our submarines to get very close to the Kursk to get espionage information on this new rocket torpedo.
You know, Bill, after our conversation yesterday and reading a little bit about your book and your philosophy or your thoughts, I guess I should say, on this, really it isn't just Russia that represents the threat right now. It's a combination of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. Now, it's a pretty well accepted fact right now that America and the European Union are pretty much in an economic war with all of these countries. Maybe not so much North Korea and Iran, but certainly China and Russia. What's the worst case scenario, in your opinion, that could happen as a result of this unofficial conflict?
Well, it's been Putin's agenda, and certainly China as well, to try to move away from what we call the petrodollar. We went off the gold standard in the 70s with Nixon's move to take us off gold. And that became a way for us to gain control, if you will, of economic agendas. All energy trades were done with U.S. dollars. It's just been that way. Well, over the past decade, Putin has seen this as being detrimental because we can tighten screws, do economic sanctions. And he and, of course, the Chinese would prefer that not to be the case. So they'd like to move to the petro-yuan, petro-ruble, if you will, and have made a number of moves in that direction. So we're at war with them in that respect. If they get their way, if we think we've had a tough time during the pandemic economically, it could be far worse.
I want to talk about, in your opinion, why it could be far worse. Unfortunately, we have a little bit of a time constraint in this first scenario here, this first segment here. We have only about 30 seconds left before we have to take a commercial break. So I'd like you to think a little bit, if you would, about the danger of these four countries all pretty much ganging up on the United States. And do you think that our current president, who's up for re-election in November, would be the best one to handle this particular situation as a leader, as opposed to his opponent, who is obviously sleepy Joe Biden? I want you to think about that just a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, retired Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Jim McKinney, and I will be right back with our guest, best-selling author Bill Reed. Bill, conventional warfare today is a thing of the past. Conventional warfare, I think, would morph into nuclear warfare, which would just be, kind of the end of the world, for being very dramatic, for lack of better terms. The only way the power can be assumed over another country today is, I would have to say, economically or with bioweapons or what have you. How do you feel that Russia and its allies, Iran, North Korea, and China, fit into my scenario?
Well, definitely they do, and we're seeing this virus and what it can do to impact the world. There are some speculations as to whether or not that was contrived or an accident on the part of the Chinese. Lots of strong indications to show one of the or the other, and that's an indication that's showing terrorists what could be done. It's showing other countries what could be done, and then you have nuclear. Of course, Russia's come out with a number of new nuclear weapons. I talk about Spies of the Deep, their new Status 6 torpedo that could take out any of the half a dozen straits that could cause a serious economic issue with our sea lanes which 90% of our goods across those sea lanes come to us. So, and low yield nukes, we've got them, they've got them. That could also be a way we could have a lot of issues in many of these hot zones, if you will, all around the world.
Yep. Bill, the you know, you talked a little bit about Putin's rise to power. And of course, you know, using, you know, the fear of terrorism and, of course, the Chechen fight, but also the threat of NATO. He really, from a 10-year kind of a, well, you know, 8-year to 10-year period of better relations between the West and East through the Yeltsin period, then Putin completely turns that around and recreates this NATO threat. And then also at the same time, he consolidates power by really pressing journalists. In fact, you know, tens, actually probably over 100 journalists have died by attacks undermining him, died by, you know, violent attacks that journalists that actually had been trying to be open, you know, moving more towards a Western free press move, and then crushed NGOs, reduced human rights rules and regulations, forced out foreign entities there, really consolidated power. And then what we see in China, they've always had a very repressive regime. You had this opening period in Russia for, you know, a decade or so, and then of course it's clamped back down with, you know, Putin. But Xi has now got the technology. He's got this incredible capability. He had really connected through the global economic system and globalization to be the dominant, growing dominant economic power in the world. And of course, he's increased his military. Those combinations right there, how closely will they work together, do you think, in the future? Or is there competing interests that they may have to face between each other?
Well, I think there's definitely cooperation going on, depending upon what the agenda happens to be. But you're right, China has made some phenomenal progress. They now have their ballistic missile submarines. And what's interesting about the Kursk incident, the Skhval torpedo I mentioned, it has supercavitation capability, which is like a force field around the tip of this projectile. Well, the Chinese have reverse engineered that. Iran has reverse engineered that with their new Hoot. North Korea has it. And China also has new submarines coming out that have this capability that are super fast. We're very concerned about it. That is one of the key things that we were taking a hard look at. And they are sharing this technology with these other countries, depending upon, again, what they want to accomplish. It's their way of trading this card for that card, if you will. And so, yes, we're seeing these escalations in terms of their capability technologically. And that's why we're having a difficult time in this fight we are in the South China Sea, where they are owning the sand islands so they can control literally over $1 trillion worth of natural resources.
Yeah, you take Malacca Strait and you take a couple of these key areas, and of course the energy supplies and the potential there. That's a tremendous impact on the global economy. The potential for competition between the two of them, because Russia is, of course, very dependent on energy supplies, both sailing to the West and to the global market. And of course, China's, you know, resource poor, certainly energy resource poor. They've got to import, which obviously, you know, has a connection with Iranian oil reserves. And of course, you know, Russia, which in fact, you know, they can have a positive benefit from each element there. But what is the long-term impact on global, I should say global power projection, if the Chinese actually want to take more resources in the eastern portion of Russia, where there's a wide open Siberia with very limited defensive capabilities, and you know, if the rest of the world is beginning to question that relationship and globalization, do you think that could be a flashpoint or pressure point possibly in the future between the two of them?
Possibly, although they have shown to have quite a bit of cooperation. You know, they cut a $400 billion natural gas deal not that long ago and have built pipes, if you will, Russia has, to feed China natural gas. They've been doing a number of cooperative moves in relation to the Northern Sea Route, et cetera. So it depends on whether or not that cooperative nature remains, or whether or not China sees an opportunity to take control of something that could cause a flashpoint, or if Russia decides to change their cooperative nature, especially in relation to the route, the Northern Sea Route shaves 40% off your time and your cost to ship goods. Right. China is jumping for joy over that. But if Russia decides to start charging too much for it, there could be a flashpoint.
Well, and if you've got two authoritarian regimes that are trying, you know, basically kleptocracies that are trying to control global markets, and certainly the Chinese clearly want to control the Asian Pacific region, and Russia would very much like to push NATO and separate our relationship, you know, U.S. relationship with Western European countries. As long as the two stay in power, it's probably going to be a challenge for the Western world.
Now, when you say the two, you mean Putin and Xi? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. The Chinese Communist Party and then the Russian kleptocracy regime.
Yeah. Well, what I find to be interesting is all of this seems to be going back very effectively, efficiently, I guess is a better way to put it, to the whole concept of the petrodollar, which would be if payment for natural resources, energy specifically, went to a petrodollar denominated in a currency other than the American, that would certainly hurt us quite a bit. Can you comment on that, Bill?
Absolutely. So again, I go into great detail about this in Spies of the Deep. What is happening is that the petrodollar, if you will, has propped up the U.S. dollar for all these decades. It's allowed us to maintain the value of our dollar. So if that becomes undermined, that could cause some severe economic decline in our country. It would be like 2008, like the pandemic times 10 over time, and we could see defaults and a number of issues happening here. Again, massive job losses, et cetera, just because the value of our dollar in our worldwide economic sectors would be greatly undermined and start to tank. We just wouldn't have the play that we do currently and could not exercise our will or our control over certain things. We would become a lot more weakened than we are.
Well, it's certainly important to have what this administration has done with the domestic energy production and the increases, which really takes us away from some of those, you know, those traps in some of those areas. Gives us a little more power. And of course, the defense spending has been an important way to rebuild, you know, strength in order to have some sort of defensive capability against that potential, you know, direction. How do you see this administration, the Trump administration, looking at these two problems, you know, both China and Russia, as well as Iran and North Korea?
Bill, we need a real quick answer on this one. We're going to be out of time here in less than 30 seconds. Do you see
this? Absolutely. So, yeah. I do see Trump as, you know, he is a businessman. And so hopefully he'll maintain the look toward how do we keep America from being so dependent upon these foreign powers and foreign resources, et cetera. And that's the only way we can shield ourselves, is not be so dependent upon foreign nations. No, and shield ourselves against that.
No question about that. We've been chatting with W. Craig Reed. Bill, thank you so much for taking the time.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.